Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance. Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, the Fossil Man, Greg Raymer, former world champion of the World Series of Poker main event. Plus, Colin Moshman, a guy who has literally written the book on Heads Up, No Limit Hold'em, a skill that Dennis is going to have to cultivate in the next few days before he goes back out to Las Vegas to play in the NBC National Heads Up Championship. Hi, I am Paul Harrah's, along with Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips and the poker coach Joe McGowan, who joins us from Southern California. Dennis and I are here in the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, where they are starting to get some tournament fever because it all starts 4 weeks from tomorrow for the big World Series of Poker circuit event, the first one ever in St. Louis.
This will be the biggest thing ever for St. Louis as far as poker goes. Absolutely.
I was just talking to Brad, one of the poker room supervisors here. He says for most of their first week, when the events are all under $500 buy-ins, $200, $340, $400, whatever it is, they'll probably get somewhere in the neighborhood of 600 players per day in the noon tournaments. And there will be three tournaments a day, also at 4 and 7. And so this is going to turn into the poker capital of the Midwest next month.
Oh, absolutely. For 2 weeks, you're going to have nothing but poker going on here. We're looking now out at the casino floor out there. That's all going to be emptied out and nothing but tables out there.
All these slot machines, all these table games.
Absolutely.
On this side of the casino. The rest of the casino will still have slots and table
that's
games
their
and all that stuff.
You know, no problem.
But, yeah, there'll probably be over 80 poker tables in here.
Yeah.
Which means they'll be able to sit up to 800 people for some of these big tournaments.
Yeah, it'll be amazing.
And I expect that they will get that. More details on that and about how you can qualify for that a little bit later on in this hour. But first, we are happy to be back from Las Vegas. I spent a full week out there. Joe, just a few days, and Dennis, just a few days. I have not played a hand of poker since I got home. Have you?
Very, very few. I kind of didn't come home, shall we say.
Yeah, you went on a big trip to Washington.
I did.
And Joe, you went off and played in a couple of big events at the Commerce, right?
That's right.
I'm jealous.
No luck for me, but yes, I played. Not as long as I would like.
Well, we'll hear about that in a couple of minutes here as well. Did mention that Dennis is going off to Vegas for the NBC Heads Up, and we'll talk about strategies for that with Colin Moshman in the second half of today's show.
Yep.
First, let's start with your big trip to Washington, D.C. You had to leave Vegas early last week.
Yes.
To go to D.C. to be at some dinner, and you told me, wait till you hear who was there. So who was there?
Well, I actually had to pull out of the high roller event at the Venetian at the NAPT out there. Was not able to participate in it, cancel it and give my seat up to someone else because I was asked by Poker Stars to fly to Washington to meet with several different people to see if we can't get some of these antiquated laws changed in there. And I was amazed at it. I sat down and it was a very small group. I think there were 16 people total in there. There was Dick Gephardt and three of his aides.
Former congressman from here in St. Louis.
Former presidential
candidate,
nominee.
Right, yep.
They were there. They were the ones that coordinated and put this together, and they did an excellent job of it. I don't know if you've ever met Dick, but he's a great guy.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We were there. There were four different congress people there, and there were eight different companies represented. And I got to sit down between T-Mobile to my right and Ford to my left.
Wow.
So, you know, it's kind of like, ooh, this is interesting.
Well, so the meeting wasn't all about online poker.
It was not. Actually, when the Secret Service walked in to check us out first, I'm starting to wonder, okay, what's going on here? A rather important person in Washington by the name of Nancy Pelosi.
Pelosi, yeah.
Walked in. And she was the guest speaker for the small group of us. It was just absolutely fascinating.
She's only the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, just third in line to the presidency. That's all minor little thing like that.
Yeah.
But she was totally down to earth. It was a small, intimate group. She talked about what was going on in the health bill and everything else. And then we actually, wide open, quiz her, talk to her, get you felt like you're almost right at the heartbeat, the pulse of the nation there. And she was giving us some actual insight, but the things that actually happened on the committee, not what was shown, not what was spoke about, but what actually happened at it.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely fascinating.
What was the reaction from her and the other three members of Congress who were there when you talked to them about getting online poker legislation pushed through or getting rid of the UIGEA or whatever the agenda was?
There's actually a lot of hope this year that this is going to get done. The benefits for it, the tax revenue to help pay some of the deficit problems, the regulation to eliminate some of the questions that everybody has about, is this, totally fair? Is this what every question that people have, by regulating it, by taxing it, by putting it out there in the open, it's a plus, a plus, a plus, and a plus.
And did they see it that way when you were making that argument?
Actually, for the first time in Washington, the responses I got were pretty positive, and that just kind of blew me away. Actually local here. Did you see in the Post-Dispatch?
I did.
There was an article there, and we had two of our local representatives there.
Russ Carnahan and William Lacey Clay.
Yes, absolutely. They both are now co-sponsors of the bill. They both came out and were so positive with it. Dick Gephardt backing it this way. It's just amazing. And allowing a company like PokerStars to sit in right with the big boys, to sit right next to Ford, to sit next to them and basically be on an equal par with them mm-hmm. in talking to the speaker.
Yep.
That was impressive.
Now, I just want to make one point. And by the way, later on, Greg Raymer is going to talk. He was with a different political group in Washington last week. He went to talk to a bunch of Republicans while you were talking to a bunch of Democrats.
True.
And we'll see what his perspective on that was. But one of the things that gets my blood boiling is when I hear stories about poker being cracked down on. And I just have to tell you this one story I saw today.
Oh, this can't be good.
Twin Falls, Idaho.
Oh, the mecca of poker. Okay,
At the Twin Falls Senior Center.
Oh,
the
my
Twin
God.
Falls Senior
now,
Center.
We had the story from Italy about the 82-year-old grandmother.
Yes.
Is this just as bad?
It is just as bad.
Oh, my God.
There are 20 guys there who have been playing in a weekly poker game in the Twin Falls Senior Center every week for 5 years.
They're hidden well from sight, I can tell.
You've got, guys in wheelchairs, guys who are living in this retirement community or an assisted living or whatever it is.
Okay, I have this visual image of one of them wheeling down with a policeman chasing him. Please don't tell me anything like that.
Not quite that, but the cops did raid the place.
Oh, my God.
And here's how much money's on the table. Each one of these senior citizens buys in for $20. $20. So if you took everybody's money, you would make $400. And by the way, a quarter of the money every week goes to the senior center. So $100 goes to them. The cops came in and raided the place and broke up the game. And one of the old guys who played in it said, I now have nothing else to do. This was the thing I looked forward to every single week. Now,
that's what I was thinking, Paul. That was my main thought. If it was me, that's what
cow.
I would look forward to every week.
Absolutely.
That's
terrible. Joe, you'd actually be precedent to play every day for bigger stakes. Joe would have had lockdown tells on the other 19 guys by the second day, and he'd have all the money in the senior center. We probably would have to rip it then. But I mean,
this is so ludicrous.
This valuable police time has to be taken up busting up a senior citizen poker game in a senior center. Give me a break. This is why we support the PPA. This is why we fight for legalized poker in every form, everywhere in the country. If you ever wonder why do we make such a big deal about it, there's a perfect example of that.
And you know what, Paul? Just talking about that makes me think of that's closer to the vast majority of poker players. I mean, there's very few guys that get together like, Dennis and Phil Ivey and Durr and,
Right.
Greg Raymer and Daniel that play high-stakes poker. I mean, that hardly ever happens. It's the guys that play 3-6 for fun, at your local casino limit. 1-3, no limit, just playing to have fun and have something
or
fun to do for entertainment.
$20 buy-in in a basement. Guys get together on Friday nights. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you,
right.
Your tiddlywinks aren't safe anymore. That's all there is to it.
Anyway, I had to tell you that story.
I had not heard that. I'm glad you didn't share that with me ahead of time. I probably would have.
Yeah.
I don't know what.
Just ridiculous. While we're talking about ridiculous things here, we got a lot of stuff we got to jam into today's show.
Okay.
We got to talk about the Joe Seebach, Gavin Smith, Jeff Madsen prop bet, which we talked about with Joe when he was on the show a couple of weeks ago. For those of you not familiar with it, the concept was a last longer bet at the LAPC, which was a WPT event, which, by the way, Joe McGowan played in this weekend. Fortunately, Joe was smart enough not to get into a sick prop bet with these guys, because here's what the bet was, as Seebach explained it to us. Whoever went out first had to get the faces of the other two guys tattooed on his body. And whoever went out second had to get the face of the last person standing tattooed on his body. Siebes went out first and was not happy about this. He says, "It is so stupid. I'm so embarrassed to even admit it. I feel like one of the scientists who worked on the Manhattan Project, and now I've done something so awful, it's going to torment the world for too long." On Twitter, he was talking about how people were asking him if he would accept a buyout, because I guess Jeff Madsen said he would let him out for $15,000, and Smith said he would take a $20,000 buyout. Seebach said, "The only thing worse than losing this bet and getting these fools' ugly faces on my body is paying them not to do it." Hell no! Now that is even sicker than the bet itself, as far as I'm concerned. Did you see any of these guys when you were at the LAPC, Joe?
I did, and it was funny. Matt Savage was the tournament director, and Seebach was knocked out, I mean, early, to be honest.
With aces. With aces.
That?
Yeah, he was knocked out with aces, right?
Oh,
somebody told me he had his aces cracked.
I had no idea.
I'm not sure.
He was knocked out. And it was early. And then it wasn't that far behind. You know, I guess it was Madsen that got knocked out. It didn't take very long. It was all in day one.
Yep, Smith made it to day two.
It made it to day two, you said?
No, Gavin made it to day two, so he won
the bet. Oh, right. Gavin made it to day two, right. You know, the other thing that I heard, too, because we were talking about it, as they were getting knocked out, Annie Duke was at our table. We've had her on the show, a great guest. And I was talking to her about it as we were sitting there. Apparently, you know, it had to be a certain size, and it also couldn't be, like, hidden in a certain part of your body where no one could ever see it. You know, you couldn't put it in a weird. It had to be, like, in a very visible spot, and it had to be a certain size. And it had to be, apparently, for, like, at least a year until you could then get it lasered off. I mean, they have to make it covered
pretty
good.
I'm investing in sandpaper if it happens to me. That's all there is to it.
I don't think sandpaper does it. I think you got to get it lasered off.
Oh, I'm telling you, sandpaper would eventually do
it. So there was none of this, get it the size of the head of a pin on the, you know, on your right shoulder blade where no one would ever see it.
Right.
What do they have to do? The Siebes have to get it on, like, his forearm or something?
Something like that. I mean, somewhere visible. It had to be a certain size and had to be a certain length of time. So they really did their homework on this. You know, it's pretty funny. And you know, everyone in the whole poker community gets the free roll on it. That's the fun of it. You know?
Oh yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
These guys do this thing, and we get all the enjoyment and the free roll of the whole deal on both ends.
That's right.
Pretty
now,
funny.
Joe, we do a lot of different bets. No, never mind. Not going there. Not going to do it. Not going to do it. Not even going to bring it up, because you'd liable to take me up on it. You'd find some way to twist it in your favor.
Now, something else I've got to mention here. After you guys left Vegas last week, I stayed at the Venetian through Thursday, and I was playing exclusively cash games after getting knocked out of the NAPT. I went out on day one, and you guys made it to day two, but that was as far as any of us made it. So I was playing cash games for several days after that. And, Dennis, I want to talk to you for a second about image, because I know you're very conscious as a PokerStars team pro about image, and we've talked about poker pros, regardless of who they're affiliated with, about their image. In fact, last week on the show, when we were at the Venetian, we talked about Kathy Liebert, who we all respect tremendously as a great poker pro and the winningest female tournament poker player of all time. But as Joe pointed out last week, you know, Kathy doesn't dress the part of a pro who wants to get endorsement dollars. She goes out wearing, you know, casual clothing and, you know, compare her to comfortable.
She's made a choice. She's decided she'd rather be comfortable at it and relax, and this is what she enjoys wearing, and that's her choice.
Okay.
But, you know.
Here's the question I have for you. I was playing cash games, and one night I played all night long and finally went to bed about 7 o'clock in the morning. I was having a good night. And as I was leaving, I went to the back of the poker room at the Venetian, not far from where I was playing, and there was a big high-stakes game with a lot of online guys who I don't know and one pro who I do know. And this pro who I do know and whose name you would know if I told you, and I'm not going to tell you who it was face down in his chips, drunk, I mean, seriously drunk, slobbering drunk on his chips, and continuing to play, by the way. The story was that everybody at the table had had a few drinks and that this guy had had something like 10 Jaeger bombs in the course of the late hours of that session. And here he was, a well-known pro. Everybody who was around there knew who this guy was. And he's, oh, come on, you guys have to stop. Just give me my money back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That was a good impersonation, Paul.
Thank you very much. That's pretty much what he sounded like. The other part of it is that night, the next night, I'm back there and I'm playing in a big PLO game, but we're playing shorthanded, about five-handed, and another well-known poker pro comes in. It's obvious from the moment he walks and sits down at the table that he's had a little bit too much to drink, and he's continuing to drink, and he proceeds to raise every street of every hand, and he's hitting cards, and he's tripling up pretty quickly in the next half hour, and then a bunch of the other pros see this. The vultures see that there's, fish near the surface, and they convince him to go off and play in a much bigger game. We were playing 5-10 PLO. They convinced him to go off and play 25-50 PLO, which is a considerably bigger game.
Monstrous.
Within an hour, this pro was still drunk or maybe even drunker, but didn't have a chip left. They had basically sucked him dry, taken every penny he had on that table. And so my question to you, as a traveling poker pro yourself who cares about images, what do you think when you hear about guys like this?
Wow. Unfortunately, I don't care whether it's baseball, football, poker, celebrities, whatever. There's always images. There's always people that act outside of the norm here that they shouldn't be doing. I think it's absolutely wrong. Had I been there, I would have probably tried to take the gentleman either off the table or had a talking to him. At the least, I would have looked him up the next day. If I need to, I would have woke him up the next day. And
One of these guys, you weren't waking up under any circumstances. Oh. Dynamite wouldn't have awakened this guy, but go ahead.
But no, you just can't. It's just wrong. Does
it matter whether they're wearing the logo of whoever it is that they're sponsored by?
No, these are known people. It doesn't make any difference. If this is a known pro, and literally there are not that many of them. There's only a couple hundred people that people recognize around the world as poker players. So, you've pretty much narrowed the scope already. It has to be one of those couple hundred people.
Right.
And you don't have to be wearing your outfit or your badges or your whatever. Everybody knows you. And you have to take – that's part of the responsibility. When you're doing this and when you become a pro and when you start wearing different patches for whatever company, I don't care which one it is, that you have a responsibility now. You are carrying that image for all the other people that are playing in all these other games. And when we want to go to Washington, when we want to make these changes, when we want to do the positive, when we want to have these charity events, and you get invited to them, and then this one guy can destroy what 10 others have worked at for months. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Day when I was in my 20s. I was a golf pro, and I gave a lot of golf lessons to the local towns and junior programs and all these clinics, and I was the pro of a local club. I almost couldn't wait towards the end to when I could move so then I could be the nut that I really am. You know what I mean? I had to be careful, even driving around town and what I did and, just trying to kind of lay low, And I was young and in my 20s. That's when I used to like to go out and drink and hang out and get in a little bit of trouble, and have some fun. But listening to the story, there's no way this was our old good friend Josh, the poker lawyer that you're talking about, is it?
No. It was not. This was a.
I'm just kidding. That was a joke.
Because I love Josh. But he said he was spewing money. I mean,
So I got to pick on him if I have the chance because I love him. Of course, I know it wasn't him.
No.
But he was out there then too. He was out there playing and having some fun playing some poker. So we had some fun while we were out there.
It was not him. These were two well-known pros, and it was a shame to see it. And you know what the real shame of the whole thing was? That guy left my table, and I didn't get any of his money when he started spewing chips.
Well, I think if they're not careful, they might get a rude awakening, too, because there's been a few other people in the news, not to mention Tiger or anybody, that lost a little bit of money because of their shenanigans. And I'm telling you, if you get a reputation for being a drinker at the table and all this other...
Embarrassing, on many fronts.
It's bad.
Yeah. And I think you are held to a little bit of a different standard,
Well, sure you are.
It's not a good thing.
Yeah. No. All right, we've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to play for you an interview that we did with the Fossil Man, Greg Raymer, a guy who is also very image conscious and you would never see in these situations. We had a great chat with him after he had just come back from a meeting with some politicians in Washington himself. We'll play that for you. And then later on in the hour, Colin Moshman, the guy who literally wrote the book on Heads Up, No Limit Hold'em, with Dennis going off to the NBC National Heads Up Championship this weekend. We'll get some tips from Colin for Dennis. As we continue, live from Harris, St. Louis, this is The Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast available on thechipleader.com.
From the poker room of Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table with the St. Louis poker pro who beat over 13,000 other players in 2 years at the World Series of Poker main event. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
We are back in the PokerStars Player Lounge at the Venetian in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris, along with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips and another Team PokerStars Pro and former world champion Greg Raymer. The Fossil Man is back on the final table and just back from a quick trip to Washington, D.C. Good to see you.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Tell us about your visit to the CPAC conference there where you were our spokesperson, right?
Correct. I mean, I was there as a representative of the Poker Players Alliance. I am proud to serve on the board of directors of that organization, and, you know, we're doing everything we can to try to get the rights of poker players protected at the federal and state levels around the United States.
And you've been working on this a lot. You recently wrote a column for the Daily Caller. Tell us what the reaction was from some of the conservatives who you ran into at the CPAC.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. You talk to conservatives and you talk about how poker, it's a freedom issue. And you talk about how adults should be allowed to do pretty much whatever they want, you know, in the privacy of their own home. You know, as long as you're not hurting someone else, as long as you're not involving children, you know, then you get to do what you want. Well, you know, they all agree with that concept. But then a lot of them think that there's an exception is correct for the things that they consider particularly bad. You know, so whether they're, you know, like a Focus on the Family organization that is very anti-gambling, you know, whether it's, you know, that organization and other organizations that maybe, you know, are against pornography and other things. I mean, you know, pretty much anything that you might label a vice, you know, there's going to be organizations that are against it. And the problem is that they think it's correct to make an exception for things that they consider immoral.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't seem to understand that, well, you know, what if the people in power down the road think that something important to you, fundamental maybe even to you, is immoral? You know, now you've set the precedent that it's okay to bar adults from engaging in immoral activities. But what is and is not moral is subjective and is determined by each individual.
Mm-hmm.
So we may have a majority opinion now on many subjects, on, you know, whether something is or is not immoral. But that opinion changes over time. So I don't want to give anyone the power to stop me as an adult from doing what I want to do. Now, if I'm directly hurting someone else, then morality isn't involved anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It may or may not be a moral act, but since I'm hurting the other guy, it's something I shouldn't be doing.
Hurting them without their consent. There are
exactly
some people who want to be hurt.
Well,
Greg,
you're right. Without their consent is appropriate. You know, but if I'm damaging your body, your property, you know, stealing from you, injuring you, any of those kinds of things, you know, even just like noise ordinances, you know, if I'm blaring my music,
sure,
then those are all things that are directly harming and impacting you negatively. The government is quite proper to stop me from doing those things.
So when you made this argument to them face-to-face, how do they react?
Well, you know, they all agree with you, but then some of them are like, oh, but, you know, there's so many people that ruin their family with gambling problems, we have to stop that. And I'm like, no, you don't. See, that's where the logic breaks down. They think they need to make an exception to protect people from themselves. And as soon as you make one exception that, yes, we're going to protect people from themselves on this issue, you're opening the door up to every issue.
Mm-hmm.
So in legal terms, we call that, you know, the slippery slope.
Yeah.
You know, don't do something that even, you know, that seems proper and appropriate if it puts you on that slippery slope and it's so easy to slide all the way down to the bottom where you're now doing things that are fascist.
I wonder if some of those people would be against a cap on the number of lottery tickets you can buy. Because there isn't. I mean, you could spend all of your money on lottery tickets and nobody is going to tell you you can't do that. Yet if you want to play online poker, there are plenty of people who go, oh no, or even brick and mortar poker.
No, I agree. It's you know, I mean, I think, you know, the lengths to which some of these people would go if you gave them the power. I mean, it's like, you know, they want to allow prayer in school, some groups. You know, I think if they thought they could get away with it, they would require prayer in school. And, oh, by the way, you Muslim and Jewish kids, you don't pray that funny stuff. You got to pray our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think some people would go that far, and they think they're doing it for good and proper and wholesome reasons. You know, I'm trying to save the souls of these poor innocent children. So they're well-intended. But it's like they've said many times in history, the best intentions actually are what tend to cause the most harm.
Oh, you're starting to legislate morality. You're getting so many different areas. You've touched on a couple of them. I mean, there's more. Remember how great the prohibition did in the 30s. I mean, you can touch on this in a dozen different ways. I agree with you 100%. We've been supporting the PPA on this since day one of this radio show.
Thank you.
On that. And we'll continue to do so. And
absolutely.
I've gone to Washington a few times for lobbying and for different things like that. In fact, I'm going back there again next week probably. But where do we go from here? How do we get this accepted by the legislature? How do they realize that this poker industry is growing and wants to be regulated and wants to be accepted by everybody?
And is every mainstream.
And is absolutely mainstream. I mean, what do we do next? How do we get this done?
I mean, in my opinion, online poker is legal right now. There's no federal law against it, unless you live in a place like Washington State where they've passed a state law specifically prohibiting it. It is legal to play online poker.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the perception of most people. And certainly under Bush, the Department of Justice, you know, made it a large point to try to state that online poker is illegal. But they never actually put their money where their mouth is to anyone who stood up to them. So when you look at someone like Card Player Magazine, who was threatened over and over again, don't run ads for the .com sites, the real money sites, they said, you know what, our lawyers say this is legal, we're going to do it. And they were threatened and threatened and threatened. They were never indicted. They never tried to arrest them, because they knew if they went to court, they would lose. So, you know, it is legal right now. But what I want to do, what the PPA would really like to do, is not just have it be legal because there's no prohibition. We would like it to be a licensed and regulated activity.
Mm-hmm.
So very much like pretty much every business in this country. You know, even if you just want to open a retail store, you know, and sell, you know, merchandise like clothing, that, you know, there's no real safety concerns with clothing. You know, it's not like food where you're going to have bacteria and make people sick. But even that kind of retail store is subject to, you know, business licensing requirements at the state or city level, you know, inspectors who come in and make sure the store has, you know, appropriate fire exits and all the things for the protection of the consumer. That's all we want for poker, you know, live and online, is that it's properly regulated like every other business in America so that the consumers are fully protected.
I'll remind our listeners that they should go to the website, thePPA.org. That's the Poker Players Alliance.
Yep.
We're all members. Greg and Dennis are great spokespeople for the game. We've been happy to be speaking about the PPA on this radio show since day one, and happy to have them as one of the sponsors of the show as well. thePPA.org. It costs $20 for you to join if you are a poker player. Even if you've never played online, even if you've never played in a casino.
Even if you're not a poker player.
Good point.
All right.
If you believe in personal freedom.
That's exactly it.
Yep. That's a great point. Join up and become a member of the PPA, the Poker Players Alliance. That's thePPA.org. Now that the politics are out of the way, how's your poker game going?
Oh, poker's fine. I haven't been able to play too many events yet this year. You know, a couple of the tournaments at the PCA and a couple of tournaments over. I went to France for the EPT Deauville. Played that main event, played a second chance event there.
Make any money?
Not in France. I was really disappointed, too, because the games were so weak. I mean, just, you know, the guy that actually, like, warned me about the crazy French players who will call with anything. He raised my blind pre-flop, you know, late in day one. I made a very large re-raise because... Actually, I didn't think he'd fold. I thought he had a decent hand. I had two queens in the big blind. But I wanted it to be the right amount of money so that I was basically pot committed, and I was what we do, a go-and-go play, we call that. So I'm going to raise him now pre-flop, and then I'm going to shove all in on the flop. And I didn't want to do a normal-sized raise because it would have left me with too many chips to just shove the flop correctly, you know, but not enough chips. You know, to play in great depth. In other words, I'm not going to be able to get away from the hand even if there's an ace on the board. because I'm not going to be – by the time I'm sure he has the ace, I've already committed myself to the pot.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided I'm going to do an oversized raise, plus I thought I might just get him to shove preflop with any playable hand. And he thought for like 2 seconds, and he called. I shoved on the flop, he called instantly, and he was 100% correct on the flop. He flopped a pair and a flush draw. So at that point, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
You know, I'm betting a little more than the pot. He's supposed to call with that hand.
I assume an under pair. It wasn't an ace or a king.
No, it was like 8-high flop.
Okay.
And he had a pair and a flush draw.
Okay.
And he had no overcards to my queens. He had 7-4 suited. So he called for like 1/3 of my stack.
Love those quality hands.
You know, so it's like he had made it X. I made it 5X when my whole stack was like 15X.
Mm-hmm.
And he just called almost without hesitation. And it, you know, I mean, I wasn't upset. I wasn't, you know, anything other than mildly disappointed. But I just thought it was really, really funny that this particular French player had warned me about the crazy French players who will call with anything. And he thought he was talking about, I mean, he honestly thought he was talking about all the other French players.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Always. About what the end of the hand was?
Oh, he hit us flush on the turn and the river. So
oh.
he hit, like, deuce of hearts on the turn, I'm drawn dead, and he hit another heart on the river just to rub it in.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
You know, so it was just amusing, and, you know, I probably was, if I'd hit my equity exactly, I mean, let's just say I won, like, $40,000 Sklansky dollars on that trip. But I came home with nothing.
Well, one thing before we let you go, though. We're having our first circuit event in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
And we have a lot of players that are stepping up for the first time to bigger events, including the 5K, the main event that's down there. Do you have words of wisdom, some 30-second thing that you can do to help these guys, to help them get comfortable moving up a bigger step to a bigger tournament or a larger tournament?
Well, I guess the main thing I'll tell them is ignore the money. I mean, you know, in other words, you add a zero on the end. You know, you've played $500 tournaments. Now you're playing $5,000. But the strategy is essentially the same. The quality of the average opponent may be higher, but that really isn't so much the issue. You should be playing to maximize your equity. You should be playing the best poker you possibly can, because once you're in the tournament, the money's gone. You can't get the $5,000 back anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you've given it to the casino. They gave you your seat card. You went over there. You got your chips. And now the money's gone. So all you can do is play it the best you can. And so it doesn't matter whether you paid cash out of your pocket, you know, whether you won the seat, you know, in an online free roll for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter how you got, you know, your wife bought you in as a birthday gift. It doesn't matter. Now the money's gone. You play the best you can possibly play. And, you know, treat it like any other tournament, because it's really not that different. You know, it's more money, it's more life-changing if you do well. But how you get there, how you win that money, is exactly the same strategy that you would use in a $50 tournament.
Greg, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Really a pleasure having
thanks,
you on
guys.
All the time.
Always glad to be on the show.
The Fossil Man, Greg Raymer, joining us here at the Final Table, brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Dennis Phillips was third in the 2008 World Series of Poker Main Event and 45th in the 2009 World Series of Poker Main Event. After those two deep runs, what's he going to do this year? Right now, he's talking poker with Paul Harrah's at the Final Table from Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to the Poker Room in Harrah's here at Harrah's Casino and we are back now. We've got a guest joining us in a few minutes. Before that, I want to mention about a place that I play all the time. It's called PokerStars.net. I got something a little different to share with you this time. They have all sorts of free roll type opportunities on it. There is a ladies poker club where you can win a trip to Monte Carlo. There's a Nordic Snowfest where you can go up into the Baltic and play with players up there. They got the NAPT here in the U.S. where you can play all sorts of different times and go to the Mohegan Sun and that. And they've got one now they've just come out with. It's called Dream Job Australia, something kind of a new concept they came up with, which I was totally impressed with. What it is, if you win it, it's a $100,000 prize, $40,000 in buy-ins for the different tournaments over there, and $5,000 a month to basically travel the circuit and play poker for a year.
Wow.
It's amazing what they've got there. That started just March 1st. Runs till March 27th when they narrowed it down to the 10 finalists. And then what it is those 10 finalists go out, and they tweet, and they blog, and they do whatever they can to promote themselves and say how they could be a great ambassador to PokerStars, which is very timely from what we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those people will be selected by the poker community to win this prize and to go out and play these tournaments and to basically be an ambassador for poker for a year.
And if you're a poker player of any age, that is a dream job. Getting
Absolutely.
Paid to play poker and travel?
Yeah. So, and I get you to meet, I'm sure, Joe down there and the rest of them and down under. I have never been to Australia yet, but I'm telling you, I will.
Yeah. Maybe you get to go have dinner with Joe Hashem at some point.
Yeah, it's very possible.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Really? Yeah. So anyway, if you want more information on that, go to PokerStars.net right now.
There you go.
And you'll find all the details there, and you can play online with pros like Joe Hashem and Dennis Phillips. Dennis is going to be headed out to Las Vegas this weekend for an event called the NBC National Heads Up Championship. I believe this is the fifth or sixth season.
Sixth
season of this event, and only 64 players go. It's an invitation-only
Absolutely.
Event. And play starts on Friday. When do you find out who you're playing against?
Thursday night, they have a drawing. We all 64 get to go in there and sit down, and they basically draw them out of a hat, and that's how we're paired up. Totally, totally random. So I could have anybody the first time. It could be a Vanessa. It could be a
Huxley.
Yeah,
Chris Ferguson.
Yeah.
Jerry Yang.
Okay, I'm waiting for you to name a few others that I want to play in that first round.
Maybe you want to play Don Cheadle. He's going to be in there.
Actually, Don's not a bad player.
Yeah?
I played with him in the Ante for Africa and that. He's a solid player.
All right, but do you have a lot of heads-up experience?
I have some. Probably not as much as most of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, when you get down in a tournament, you play it. I play heads up other times, individual with people. But I can always use some help.
Well, that's why I've invited our next guest on. His name is Colin Moshman. He literally wrote the book on Heads Up, No Limit Hold'em, expert advice for winning heads up poker matches. Colin, welcome to the final table.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure having you here.
Absolutely. I'm telling you, I need help. I get to go against Chris Ferguson and Huxley and who knows who out there. If you can give me some pointers, I will take anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully the table draw goes well. But regardless of who you play, you know, definitely just having good, solid poker instincts and being a good player is really key. And heads up, you know, a couple of the big things are that there's only one other guy that you're up against. So unlike full ring, it's pretty unlikely that he has much, and a couple of consequences of that. One is that you can value bet a lot thinner. So if you raise nine-handed and end up at the river with second pair, a lot of the time that's not a hand to play a particularly big pot. You just want to check it down. But second pair and heads up is a much bigger hand.
Makes logical sense on that.
So what does that mean about starting hands? Your range obviously is going to be a lot broader. You're not going to be obviously playing just premium hands because you'll be folding 9 out of 10 or more of your hands. So what do you do when you're in a starting range, and how does that matter? How does that change when you're the big blind or you're the small blind who's always on the button?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. You do have to loosen up a ton, and hands that would be pretty weak in full ring become a lot stronger. And I said the classic example is that if you have any ace, even ace 2 offsuit, you know, if you raise that, like, under the gun in the full ring game, you're basically a maniac. But any ace is a strong hand.
You've got
ace high. That's a pretty sweet hand right there. So, you know, I would play any ace from the button or big blind without question. Mm-hmm. And you want to be a lot looser on the button than in the big blind. You know, one analogy that's been made, it's like if you were a sports team and you could just fold your away games. That's like playing heads up. You know, you can just fold when you're in the big blind. And it's not, I'm not saying you should be a total nit in the big blind, but if you're a little bit unsure, be a lot more inclined to get involved in the hand if you're the button than when you're playing out of position in the big blind.
A position comes in so much more. The aggressive play and playing your position are probably two things that are extremely important in heads up, I would guess.
Yes, absolutely. And so, like, you know, the fact that you can value bet a lot thinner because your opponent is often as a weak hand, you can just be a lot more aggressive in general. And, you know, some players are going to be a lot easier to walk over than others. But even a guy, you know, who's a tough player and knows that you're playing a solid aggressive style, it's going to be really tough if you're playing a very positional, aggressive game, and you're not afraid to make some plays like, bluff racing on a paired board or semi-bluffing, a lot wider than you would in full ring, with weaker draws like maybe a gut shot straight draw and one overcard. Those become much more powerful plays in heads up.
I'm actually going to quote something out of your book here that I thought was interesting. I want you to comment on it if you would.
Sure.
You stated in there, withdraws as opposed to made hands, it's often better to check raise. That's because if your opponent checks behind, you still benefit from getting a free card, which might complete your draw. But with a made hand, such as a pair, you want to value immediately, as future cards are more likely to help your opponent than you.
Yeah, which
I thought that was a great quote.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Yeah, that's right in heads up, no limit, hold 'em. And when you check with a draw out of position, it is pretty effective because you also don't want to let your opponent totally run over you with position. And if he's afraid that you could check raise him, not just when you flop a strong hand, which is obviously the minority of the time and heads up or any situation, but if you're going to play your draws really strongly too, then you're going to be a tough guy to deal with.
Let me ask you about things like suited connectors or small pairs. These are hands that if you're playing in a full ring game of 9 or 10 people, you want to have as many people in the pot as possible so that when you do hit your hand, when you flop a set or when you flop a flush draw or a straight draw, you're going to be able to get some money in there and hopefully get multi-way action. How do you play those when you're only playing heads up?
Well, it depends a lot on the situation. You're going to play pretty much any of those hands on the button. And out of position, you'll often play them. It depends a lot on your opponent and also stack depth. So, for instance, let's say you've got a hand like 5-4 suited. Well, if you're very deep, it's like 100 blinds, and that hand, the potential of it hitting a strong hand is stronger because you have better implied odds. Mm-hmm. And you also want an opponent who might take one pair of hands too far. So if you think that your opponent might be willing to put a stack in 100 blinds deep with a hand like a weak top pair or a second pair, then those hands also become a lot stronger. So it definitely depends a lot, but usually they're pretty playable in heads up as well.
I've got a question for you. Out of position, suited connectors, again, a 4-5 or something like that, I like to raise with those simply because if your opponent then has the 5-6, the 6-5, 8-5, I don't know, whatever, something that could be, basically a dominant hand over you, most of the time they'll fold those. The only thing they're going to call, usually it's with a couple of big cards or an ace or something like that on it. A lot of times with a 4-5 there, you've got free cards. You know your opponent most likely doesn't have those. And I love it then when you hit the flop. They never put you on a 5-4 raising free flop, even heads up.
Yeah, that's always sweet to hit the flop with a hand like that. And that's good, man. That's a really aggressive instinct, and that's correct. You just you don't want to make a play like that against the type of guy you might find in like an online $5 Sinningo who's just never going to fold. And the semi-bluffing capacity of a hand like 5-4 suited goes down a lot. But against tough players in the event you're going to be playing, that can be a really good move because they're going to have decent standards. They're not going to want to just randomly call a re-raise with a hand like King 2 offsuit, and it's going to be tougher for them to put you on a range. So that's definitely a strong play.
What about hands that you would probably be unlikely to play in early or middle position if you were playing in a ring game, whether it's a cash game or a tournament with a full table? Hands like Queen 10 or Jack 9 or even King 9, those kind of middle semi-connectors. What value do those have in heads-up play? Obviously, position has got to be part of the answer there. But how would you view those kind of starting hands?
Well, it's funny because anytime you talk about a question, particularly in no limit, the very common answer is it depends. And
right.
with merit, but if you want to be concrete about it, let's say that I'm in position. It's not super short stacked or anything. I don't know a lot about my opponent. A very rough guideline from hands that I'm going to be opening, and I'm never going to open limp. It's going to be raise or fold. And I'm going to be raising, let's say very roughly, any pair, any ace, any king, any suited face card, roughly queen 5 offsuit, jack 6 offsuit, any mid-suited connectors, hands like 8-7 offsuit, so a fairly wide range like that.
Sounds to me like you're staying away from 9-deuce. Play everything else.
Yeah, only, that's a well, pretty good suited, summary. Though. I like that.
The other thing that I found out you've got to be careful on and heads up is you get into a pattern because you play so many hands so fast. You just automatically look at the two cards and you instantly react, especially after you've played somebody for an hour and a half, and you've gone really deep into this thing. You start falling into notable patterns, or at least I notice other people do against me, which I love on that. You know, and then when they're going to be out of it, they have that little bit of a subtle tell. They hesitate, they stop for a second, and so they're not playing their normal pattern. I don't know.
How do you fall from falling into that pattern yourself?
I'll tell you, the thing you really want to do, if possible, is to act kind of like Chris Ferguson does and try to really take some time, even for more trivial. You're not like, let's say that you're the big blind and you've got 3-2 offsuit facing a raise. You can just insta-fold that. But for any decision that requires any thought, take at least a couple of seconds, and that way it's a lot easier to remain grounded.
Oh, that's very, very good advice. And I'm telling you, Chris, anything you can do to emulate Chris on Heads Up is probably a good thing.
Yeah, particularly his record at the NBC Heads Up.
Okay. I think in your book you said that being a loose aggressive is probably the best way to play on Heads Up. Could you kind of delve into that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. Well, the thing is that in Heads Up, since your opponent usually does not have a hand, if he's also willing to fold to some extent, he's not just a calling station, then the more aggressive player has a pretty natural built-in edge, because the vast majority of the time, neither of you guys have a hand that's at all decent by full ring or even six max standards, and so the aggressive player is going to be the one who picks up the pot. And that tends to be why loose aggressive is so good. And as an extension of that, too, when the stacks get shorter, you really need to play a super aggressive game. And looking at some previous heads-up championships, you see players falter when the stacks get short. And even if they start off playing loose aggressive, don't continue. So, like, when Sam Farha played Tuxedo last year, you know, Farha is a very loose aggressive, fearless player, but he kind of shut down when the stacks got shorter. You know, he folded hands like low offsuit aces and suited Broadway hands for under 10 blinds, and you really want to keep your eye on the ball and just become very aggressive at that stage of the tournament as well.
Last question we have for you today, Colin. Obviously, we're talking about Dennis going and playing against some of the best in the world in a heads-up tournament. Most people, the only chances they get to play real heads-up play would be at the end of any kind of local tournament that they're playing, where it gets down to the final two players. But how much of this can you use if you are in a regular tournament or a regular cash game with a full table? Because you are going to be playing a lot of those hands heads-up against one opponent at some point. You're going to raise, you might only get one caller, or after the flop, you're going to be doing heads-up play quite often against only one other person. How much of the same strategies can be applied, or is it a completely different ballgame?
No, it can be pretty similar, and a lot of the concepts are definitely there. You just have to modify them for the fact that guys are going to be on different ranges. So, for instance, the idea of a pot control is something that I talk about a lot in the book and elsewhere, and you might be willing to play a bigger pot with a marginal hand in heads up, but those same concepts are really important in any context, so it's definitely a pretty similar skill set.
Yeah, learning how to manipulate the pot size, absolutely a key.
Yeah, and again, remember this is heads up. I played the shootout, the 5K shootout out at Vegas during the WSOP. Got heads up on my table, woke up to pocket queens, and was so thrilled to death to get it all in pre-flop against the king deuce. And then walked away from the table when he flopped the king. So, you know, sometimes it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, the cards do still play. Colin, we appreciate your time today. Let me get a plug in again for the book. It's called Heads Up, No Limit Hold'em, Expert Advice for Winning Heads-Up Poker Matches. We will have a link on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. And we thank you for joining us today.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. It's ColinMoshman.com for staking, for coaching, for blogs. I've got my wife, Katie, Hutch, and Ethan, for Keen, Kid Cash, a lot of talented grinders, all blogging away there.
All right, well, we really appreciate it. Thank you. And by the way,
thanks
if I
so
lose,
much,
I get to blame
and
you.
And Dennis, best of luck in the tournament. You're going to take it down, my man, all right?
All right, thanks a bunch.
Colin Mosterman, the guy who literally wrote the book on heads-up play, giving some advice to Dennis before he heads out this weekend. Asking, when will Dennis be on High Stakes Poker? The first date of the first show is March 21st, so you got a couple of weeks before that. But you may want to watch next Sunday night's High Stakes Poker show, when there's a million-dollar prop bet between Tom Dwan and Phil Ivey. I'll just say this. If Ivey can do this, he's a better man than I.
Oh, and it's the first of $2 million bets that they make.
Is there one during the shows that you taped?
Wait and see, guys.
All right. That's it for the final table today. For Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips and Colin Moshman and the poker coach Joe McGowan, I'm Paul Harris. Download our shows on thechipleader.com and email us your questions at dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. This is the final table on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.